Stay a while. Stay forever.
Hello and welcome to Impossible Mission, the semi-regular outing here on The Geek Show, where we talk about a recent happening from the world of video games in a little bit more depth than would traditionally be allowed on News Trash. I am Rob, and as ever, I have been joined by Prob.
Hello.
Yeah, what we talk about this time? Because there's so many we got on the back burner here. It's been quite friendly for content, you know, for picking up topics.
Yeah. One thing kind of stood out to me, and it's been causing a little bit of a to-do on the interwebs recently, and that's Ubisoft's decision to turn The Division into a free-to-play game, the new Division game, The Division Heartland.
Oh, good, because honestly, there's like other topics that I've been noticing recently, like how it's becoming much more territorial between all the sort of different parties. But that'd be a horrible episode to do, so this is much easier. Not going to annoy anybody, so that's good.
Well, this is the thing. People are kind of up in arms about The Division becoming a free-to-play game because from the way I understand it, Ubisoft... Well, it's this thing, right? Ubisoft and quite a lot of other publishers and developers have been, for a long time, wanting to tap into that massive, massive market that is the free-to-play game.
Well, I think you've got to sort of backtrack a little bit even before that. You know, there's been this thing going around in publishers who constantly been complaining of the fact that games cost more than they used to.
Yeah.
So they've got to find other ways to make money. But before that, just on the first point, games cost more than they used to because games publishers constantly keep on pushing this idea that games have to be effectively endless. And when games are effectively endless, of course they're going to cost more money.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's a prophecy that they said was going to happen, so they're going to make it happen.
Yeah, anyway. which is one of the reasons why you end up with games like Assassin's Creed Valhalla, where a 20 to 30 hour game is padded out to the nines to become a 100-hour game. It's a 100-hour game.
Oh, wow, that's not neat.
With all of the extra fetch quests and all of the extra side quests and everything like that, that add virtually nothing to the game.
Yeah. So that's where you get like situations arising where publishers and developers want to get more money from a game. So that's where the idea of loot boxes came out.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's kind of slowing down a little bit because governments around the world have been sort of claiming, yeah, that's gambling. Don't put gambling in your games. It's bad. It's illegal. And around that time, it was kind of lucky that the mobile model started popping up, didn't it? The free-to-play and stuff like this.
The mobile model has been around for about a decade now, right? The free-to-play game.
Really, really hit its stride in the last 2-3 years.
Yeah, partly because of games like Fortnite and PUBG and stuff like that. One of the more recent games that's become really big is Call of Duty Warzone. And obviously Ubisoft have looked at what Activision have achieved with Call of Duty Warzone and gone, we want a bit of that pie.
I mean, let's be honest, Ubisoft are one of the most egregious pushers of microtransactions.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the name of their racing game was. Was it The Club or The Crew? Or that one that outside of America or the other?
The Crew, wasn't it?
Yeah, one or the other. But basically, if you want any of the better cars, you have to pay real money for them. And it's just this is a good game, but you're basically making me hate it when I'm playing it.
See, this is the thing, and this is where the mind tricks come in with this free-to-play model, right? People are more willing to pay for things in a free-to-play game than they would be in a game where they've had to pay 70 quid for the game, or 50 quid for the game, right?
And they end up paying way more than 70 quid. The typical consumer, anyway.
There are games that are free to play. One of the most notorious ones is that, I don't know, you've probably seen the adverts for them. You know, that, Homescape, Gardenscape, whatever.
Yeah, the one which has the advert, which is basically, here's a guy who's in a kitchen and it's got some tubes, and you got to move the tubes, otherwise he'll get gunked or electrocuted or something.
Exactly.
And that's nothing like the game. So even before you play the game, it's basically advertising something which doesn't exist.
Yeah, but here's the thing. The game is a match three game, and you basically go around repairing your mansion with your parents. Now, it's a very well-designed game for what it is, but here's the hook. That kind of game, because you get absorbed into the whole world of the game, you can easily spend, in a week, you can easily spend 200, 300 quid in a week, right, just on that game, and not even realise you've spent it. And the only reason I know that is because happened to a mate of mine. He did exactly that. He spent £300 on Homescapes, and he didn't even know he'd done it.
That's kind of the core of why I keep at arm's length from mobile gaming.
Yeah.
Because I know how insidious it is with the marketing and pricing stuff.
Yeah. The microtransactions in mobile games, again, it's one of those things, and the big publishers and the bigger developers want a piece of this pie. I mean, there's rumours that Beyond Good and Evil 2 is going to be a live service game.
It's not rumours. It's just the way that has been developing, the things that they've been saying. It's basically all but suggested that it's going to be this free-to-play ecosystem.
Yeah.
Multiplayer game without actually coming out and saying it. If it actually comes out at all, I mean, which even that, you know, what it's looking like has me very, very disheartened as a big fan of the original.
Yeah.
I mean, how it can turn. Basically, I guess you'd sort of compare it to, what you compare it to really, it was a little bit of Zelda in it, like an action adventure RPG sort of thing, where you take photos of animals and save the world from aliens and your best friend's a pig, and you turn that into a free-to-play live service game.
Yeah, and the reason why they're doing that is because of the name, Beyond Good and Evil. It's such a beloved game that they want to capitalise on the name.
But let's be fair, they've pissed off a lot of people by turning that into that.
Yeah, but here's the question I have with regards to this, right? Because this is basically, this is a door opening on a new form of video game business model, which is only going to get more and more rampant as time goes on. And the question I have is, what other games are we going to see heading down this route?
Before that, honestly, I think if that's what's going to happen with video games, reaching this point where it's sink or swim for the video game industry.
Yeah.
There's going to be some people who actually don't get bothered in the slightest by it and they're okay playing it. Tend to be younger people because they're more invested in the Call of Duty Warzones and the Fortnites. There's going to be the older people who are used to just paying for a game and that's it. You paid for the game.
Yeah.
They're going to be incredibly alienated by this. So there's going to be this weird schism that's going to be caused in the video game culture by this hunger that companies can't seem to satisfy.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right. There is going to be a breaking point, and I can see that as well. I think anybody with eyes would be, and some modicum of common sense would be able to see that.
Yeah, definitely.
But you know, I do have to ask the question: what other games are going to go down this route? If The Division has gone down this route, and Call of Duty has gone down this route, and Beyond Good and Evil is going to be a live service game, I mean, if you look at other franchises, World of Warcraft, for example, is one of the biggest MMOs in the world. Yeah. In fact, at one point, it was the biggest MMO in the world.
It's the thing that kind of made MMO a known quantity, really.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say
in the public eye.
Yeah,
not within nerd circles and geeky circles. I mean, general, normal gamers heard of the term MMO through World of Warcraft.
Exactly. MMOs have been around for a long time, but World of Warcraft was the one that really brought it to public attention. You're right. But on the back of World of Warcraft, you've had other MMOs. You've had Terror, you've had EVE Online, you've had various others. I'm impressed by Final Fantasy XIV, and I used to play Final Fantasy XIV a lot. I've kind of fallen off it a bit in recent years.
Longevity's amazing.
Yeah, and one of the reasons for that is because what Square actually set out to do, because the original version of Final Fantasy XIV was dog shit.
I heard, yeah.
It was that bad. And they basically took it apart and rebuilt it from the ground up with a new control system, new combat system, new everything, and called it A Realm Reborn, relaunched it, and everybody's happy with it. And what they did...
There was a vision there, though.
Yeah, there was a vision there. But one of the things that they did, and it's one of the reasons why Final Fantasy XIV, I think, recently overtook World of Warcraft, which is surprising, but one of the things that they did was focus on a narrative. They had a very strong single-player campaign.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and that's what I worry about, you know. I mean, there's ways to do this, which is good, and there's ways to do this, which is bad.
Yeah.
There's the Final Fantasy way, like you said, which they really broke it down and built it back up again, and this was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And then there's the Avengers.
Yes, exactly.
That more of these companies are doing Avengers because they want some of that sweet, sweet pie than people are doing like Final Fantasy 14.
See, you read my mind. I was actually going to bring the Avengers up right after I was talking about Final Fantasy 14. With any game, right, you're supposed to have certain things given to you with, as part of the game. Achievements, trophies, new costumes, new weapons, new abilities, that sort of thing. That's part of the game. But when you put these things behind a paywall, that's no longer a game.
Well, the best costumes are all behind paywall, and they're getting money for this game by basically getting costumes from mobile phone providers and energy providers. And it's just the most crass capitalism I think I may have ever seen in video games. I'm certainly up there if it's not it.
One of the things I used to love about games like EVE Online, for example, was that you could actually pay for your subscription in EVE Online by basically just playing the game. If you got enough credits in the game, you could buy a Plex in the game that was another 30-day subscription for you. So you could pay for your subscription just by playing the game.
Let's loop it back around to Ubisoft, though, because I want to sort of look at it franchise by franchise to see what they could potentially do with each, if they can do anything with each.
Well, I think we need to expand it from Ubisoft, but Ubisoft
but the
first.
This is who we're talking about today, but there's other companies which is relatable.
Yeah, starting off with Ubisoft, they've said The Division, but
personally, I think it's, of all the franchises that Ubisoft have, The Division's probably the best one, given the nature of what it is, because if they do it right, if they do it like it's story-driven, and it's not just, oh, here's another drop, here's another raid, here's another blah, 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 if they make it narrative, yes, it could work, but it could just as easily not work. Like Ubisoft's mobile phone games have been really, really bad.
Two franchises immediately sprang to mind when I thought about free-to-play games and Ubisoft. Number one was Watch Dogs, because they've done Watch Dogs Legion, right? And Watch Dogs Legion, okay, mixed reception.
It's a valiant experiment, but an ultimate failure.
Yeah, but imagine Watch Dogs Legion as an MMO.
Horrible.
As a free-to-play MMO where you don't know whether the person you're talking to is friend or foe and whether it's an NPC or an actual player.
Yeah, it's an absolutely horrible idea, that one. Because, honestly, it might be likely because it's clear, plain as day, that Ubisoft don't care about Watch Dogs because they've sent it to its death every time it's had a new game.
Yeah, but that's not the one that I'm most concerned...
Just about... add to that. They put out Watch Dogs Legion a few weeks before Assassin's Creed, so it shows how much faith they have in it. So,
yeah.
As much as I think it's a horrible idea, it's probably more likely than not.
Yeah, well, you've just mentioned the other franchise, because you remember Assassin's Creed Unity? Do you remember Assassin's Creed Unity, Rob? The travesty that was an MMO Assassin's Creed?
I don't remember much about Assassin's Creed, to be honest. It's just a big grey blur of double knife hands.
Do you not remember the trailer during the French Revolution or whenever it was, sometime in France, and you have the assassins and there's like, fight together! You're like...
I try not to remember Assassin's Creed, Rob, because it just gives me a headache.
But yeah, Assassin's Creed Unity was a failed experiment in making a multiplayer Assassin's Creed game.
Yeah.
And I reckon if they wanted to cash in on a franchise, that would probably be the one above Watch Dogs. I would put Assassin's Creed as a potential.
Far Cry, they couldn't do anything with, although I wish they'd just do more than, it's the same thing, but in a new place, because that's just completely lacking in any imagination. Riders Republic, that's a new franchise sort of coming off the back of Steep. That could be free to play, because of the nature of it, and I don't think that'd damage it too much.
Yeah.
What else have they got, really? Beyond Good and Evil, which we've talked about.
Yeah, Beyond Good and Evil. They've got quite a few... See, this is the thing. Ubisoft have quite a few studios under their belt that they've basically taken over and, you know, that have become part of them over the years. I think Microids is one of them, and what was it? There was, I think, a few others. Sunflower.
Here's the thing, Ubisoft. Here's the thing. Do whatever you want. Make all of your franchises free to play. I don't care. Just bring back Rayman, and we're cool. Yeah?
Yeah.
That's all I've got to say. Bring back Splinter Cell, make that a normal game. Bring back Rayman, make that a normal game. To hell with the rest of them. Make them all free to play. Don't care.
Oh. What if they make Splinter Cell a free-to-play game?
I don't think it's possible. You'd have to do some real mad gymnastics to make that free-to-play game.
You're saying that, but they tried to do... what was that Metal Gear game that they
Metal
did?
Metal Gear Survive.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Konami when they kind of lost the minds.
Yeah, that exists. And if that
it's
exists...
Really
yeah, that exists, and if that exists, I would not put it past Ubisoft. And I know it's a completely different company, but I wouldn't put it past them doing the Splinter Cell free-to-play game.
Yeah, it'd be possibly the biggest video game middle finger to a fandom in the history of video games, because they really, really, really want Splinter Cell back, and to do that to that fandom would be just cruel. So cruel.
Oh my God,
it'd be horrible.
They've already got For Honor, which is actually quite a successful... it's subscription-based, isn't it, For Honor?
I'm not sure what it is, but it's ticking away, and it's got a good fandom.
Yeah, it's one of those. It's one of those things where you look at Ubisoft's back catalogue, and from recent years, aside from the likes of the Tom Clancy stuff, I mean, if they're doing The Division, I would not put it past them doing other things like Ghost Recon and Splinter Cell as free to play.
Siege works well within its current sort of system.
Yeah, Rainbow Six. Yeah,
Rainbow Six Siege. Yeah.
But that's taken a while to actually build up, because that didn't work properly, and they basically, you know, patched it and added to it and patched it and added to it, and it's taken, what, 3-4 years for it to get to the point it's at now?
Yeah, and it's huge now.
Yeah.
But it didn't really work at it, yeah.
But what Ubisoft want to do is basically have something like Call of Duty Warzone, where people started playing it from day one, and it was big from day one.
I mean, I'm intrigued about The Division Heartland, because honestly, it felt like it was just missing something, The Division.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was, so I'd be compelled to try it out on a free-to-play system. I mean, I wouldn't pay anything for it, because honestly, I don't want any money of mine to go to Ubisoft. I can't stand them, unless it's for Rayman. But yeah, The Division, I'm curious.
See, I played The Division, and I've played bits of The Division too, and... To me, and I know that The Division has its fans, but to me, it's a game without a soul.
I mean, that might be what it's missing, but there's something there which it just lacks.
That's what I mean. It's lacking a soul. Yeah.
On your theory here, in the board meeting, we've got The Division, what can we do? It's good, but it's lacking something. One guy in the back says, soul, and then it's got, you know, that meme where... It's like my own strip, and somebody suggests something, and I throw them out the window.
Yeah,
and
that's me.
Throw money at it and make people pay for it. That's it. That's what it's missing.
Exactly. But this is the thing. The Division 1 and The Division 2, you play the games, and I'm just basically going through the motions playing the games. There's no incentive for me to try or do anything particularly special or relevant. I'm just basically going through the motions.
Just here's the thing which I've always felt about free-to-play games. The ones which really have a success rate are the ones where you feel like you have some sort of level of attachment to the character that you're working with, you're playing as.
Or to the world.
Yeah, and that's not there for The Division at all.
Yeah, apparently. Exactly. Because at the end of the day, part of it is the setting. I hate to say it, but part of it is the setting. Oh no, America has fallen apart. Let's get together and fix America. And like, I'm British, I don't really care.
Yeah.
Is number one. Right? I honestly don't really care.
Yeah. You're going to give people like a stake for it. I mean, that's the weird thing. You think that Ubisoft are an American company with a concept like that, but they're not. French.
Mm. Yeah.
Ubiquitous Software are French.
And if it was Canada is falling apart, we have to save Canada, I'd be like, okay, let's give it a go. Yeah, can I fight some bears? Can I fight some bears?
A more interesting geographical game, though, wouldn't it? Because
yeah,
there's a lot of Canada is like massive, massive, massive woodland.
Do you know the funniest thing about Canada is pretty much all of the people are like on the edge of the US border. And to the further north that you go, there's like virtually no one.
Like woodland and then ice and then nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
But you hinted that you wanted to talk about other franchises from other publishers, so, you know, shoot.
Yeah, I mean, well, I've already mentioned Final Fantasy, and I know that Square already have, like, various free-to-play Final Fantasy games on mobile devices, but they look like free-to-play games. They're pixel graphics, stuff like that. Final Fantasy Brave Exvius is, you know, one of the examples. There are others of varying degrees of graphical quality. Yeah, but if you look back to last year, but yeah, the success of Genshin Impact, and Genshin Impact is a solid game, and I can see other publishers going down the route of putting out a solid game as a free-to-play game and having microtransactions at some point appear in the game, which is basically what happened with Genshin Impact.
Yeah,
so fine. Up to a point, it gets you invested in the world, in the characters, everything like that, and then it introduces the microtransactions. And yes, it's a free-to-play game, but up to that point, you kind of feel like you've got your money's worth.
Here's the thing. I'm not averse to the idea of free-to-play games. I believe that games can come in different sizes and packages. Not everything needs to be a £70 AAA game. There can be different things. Smaller games, yeah. Cheaper price. Indie games, cheaper price. Free-to-play games, completely separate altogether. It's not clearly we're not in the world of one size fits all.
I would not put it past Capcom, for example, to do a free-to-play Resident Evil game at some point.
Yeah, I don't think that really jams as a concept. Street Fighter, sure. Yeah, Street Fighter works. But Resident Evil, not so much.
Free-to-play zombie games are all over the place. And the only thing they're missing is a Resident Evil game.
Yeah, you put Resident Evil is sort of heightened horror melodrama.
Yeah, I know. You put a Resident Evil game out there, and if it's halfway decent, it will basically fly. All it has to be is halfway decent. And all you need to do for that is basically have some investigation or as to, you know, the virus and what's going on and where everything's going. Have a basic character creator and let them explore and kill zombies from a third person or over the shoulder perspective. That's all you need.
Yeah, I'd be very wary about doing it with Resident Evil because I don't think they're entirely safe from the legacy of all those bad games. They are one bad decision from, you know, being dragged back to the filth of Resident Evil 5, 6 and all of those pointless spin-offs. So I think Resident Evil's one you got to kind of play safe with for a little bit longer at least.
Yeah, that's why I didn't say, I said at some point, I didn't say now.
Oh, no, I'm just qualifying that.
Yeah, but it is something that is possible. It's entirely possible. We know zombie free-to-play games are very, very popular.
Boring, conceptually, but, you know, popular.
Yeah. I mean, we know that sports games are always popular, and there's the, you know, free-to-play sports games are a dime a dozen, so I think we can discount those. We can just put those off to one side.
Honestly, free-to-play sports games are probably the best sort of concept for a sports game anyway.
Yeah.
They don't make sense as an annual release. They just don't.
Unless it's a subscription model where you pay an annual subscription for that game and it gets updated.
As a $50, $60, $70 annual release, it just doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. Let's put it this way. I would happily pay, right? And I know it comes to about 60 quid for a year. But if FIFA was a subscription model and I paid like 4 quid a month for it, yeah? Or 5 quid a month for it, I'd happily pay that for a few months.
For a few months, yeah.
Because it means I can basically end the subscription when I get bored of playing it, restart the subscription when I want to play more of it.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah, and I'll always have the latest version of the game that way.
Yeah, but FIFA, EA are supremely greedy when it comes to FIFA.
Yeah, but if you look at EA franchises, where to begin with the EA franchises? Because this is an avenue that EA are definitely going to explore.
So we know everything that EA does, it's going to be free to play. They have no morals at that company. They really don't. They've shown it time and time again. I mean, a few weeks ago, we did that story about their reaction to a news story that maybe they're pushing FIFA Ultimate Team a little bit too hard. It was kind of like, yeah, we don't care. pay, 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 we want your money. That was kind of like the subtext of everything that they said. So morals and EA are kind of like, you know, night and day.
Yeah. Do you know one of the things, though, that I think is going to be, and this is going to be a tragedy, if what we are talking about comes to pass, if the publishers and the developers, the bigger ones, really go down this route and take their existing IPs and make them free to play. Because they're basically cannibalizing their own back catalog. They're taking these beloved titles and turning them into some kind of Frankenstein's monster of a game.
And
for profit.
Like I said, they're drawing a line in the industry, in the community, in the people who interact with their games.
Yeah. And that's just all that's going to achieve, from my perspective, this weird, and I can only call it cannibalization of their own content, of their own IP, because that's effectively what it is, isn't it?
To an extent, yeah.
You know, all I can see is that basically pushing gamers away from those games.
But it's appealing to a very ready-to-spend minority.
Yeah.
So they don't care, just as long as they're getting the money, some companies.
Do you know the interesting thing about Genshin Impact? And I'm going to use... I think Genshin Impact is one of those games where you could easily do kind of a paper about it as to why it became so successful and examine the reasons why. And I think one of the reasons why is because it's a new IP. It didn't exist as a previous franchise or anything like that. It's a totally new IP, totally fresh story, totally, you know, totally new characters, and just launched under its own steam and became popular.
Yeah.
And if publishers and developers are putting out new content, new titles, new IPs as free-to-play, that might be interesting.
Yeah, if it's not damaging the existing stuff and it's just new ideas, maybe.
Because the last thing you should be doing is damaging your own brand and damaging your own IP just because you want to make money.
Again, the proof's in the pudding, and some companies seem all too willing to do that.
Yeah, EA. And... yeah, just too many games to list when you say that.
There is. EA would do it to anything.
It's a strange situation that we've ended up in.
Just to clarify, I'm not being anti-EA. I'm just basically commenting on their nature.
Yeah, but I mean, it is a strange situation that we've ended up in. Okay, none of what we're talking about might happen, right? It may be that publishers... yeah, it may be, I'm just speaking hypothetically, it may be that publishers wait and see what happens with The Division. Because Call of Duty...
There's certain companies where you think, yeah, they'll happily do it, they have no bones about it whatsoever.
Yeah.
So Ubisoft, EA, Activision, Blizzard, them, I think, would have no bones about heavily free-to-play eyes and monetizing their content. But the others, I don't think they'd be quite as willing to do that.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, say, THQ Nordic...
yeah, I don't think they would.
Yeah, I don't think they would. Team 17, they're off doing their own thing anyway.
Yeah. Sony first party, no. Microsoft first party, no. Nintendo first party, no.
Exactly. Square already dabble in free-to-play games, but they basically... they're happy with Final Fantasy 14. They've got another expansion coming out in October this year. And that seems to be generating a lot of, a lot of goodwill from players for them as a company.
Yeah.
People are buying merchandise for Final Fantasy 14. People are, you know, buying items in-game and renewing subscriptions for it quite regularly. So, which kind of brings us back to a weird point, right? It wasn't long ago when MMOs started kind of being a bit free-to-play themselves.
That's the only way that could sort of...
compete with the free-to-play model.
Well, the MMO subscription thing isn't very contemporary.
Yeah.
Whereas I think free-to-play is a bit more...
yeah, it's a bit more contemporary, but again, we come back to this thing, you have to have something that pulls you in so you are willing to pay for the game. And with the MMO free-to-play thing, it was like, oh yeah, you can get up to this level before you have to start paying for your subscription, right? Up to level 30 or something like that. By that point, you're invested in the game, in the world, in the character that you created. So, yeah, if you want to keep playing, you're going to buy a subscription.
For certain titles.
Yeah. For certain titles, it definitely works. But, I don't know. I mean, would Konami go down a free-to-play route?
Yeah.
With what?
No, I don't know, but for a company who turned their franchises into pachinko machines, I don't think you can judge them too harshly.
Yeah,
I do think they are trying to repair their name and their legacy.
Yeah,
but still, they've got a long way to go.
There are certain anime-based games that are free, that have free-to-play versions or free-to-play kind of spin-offs, but the main game itself isn't free-to-play. So things like Persona and that, I know there's free-to-play Persona stuff.
Yeah.
But I think it's more difficult with those because the free-to-play market is awash with all sorts of anime-based or anime art-style games. They're a dime a dozen. So, I mean, it's an interesting thing to look at. And we will obviously watch this space and see what develops with this whole free-to-play business. Will other companies jump on board or not? You know, will they push big franchises towards it or will they do new IPs?
Well, what's your opinion of the increasing free-to-play games that are on the market? Comment below, we'd love to hear from you.
If you want to listen to more of me and Rob talking about video games, then you'll find News Trash and Marmalade on our channel on YouTube. And if you are enjoying everything and you want to support us, you can find our Patreon link in the description below.
Hello, fellow Vault Hunters. I'm J. Michael Tatum, and you're listening to The Geek Show.
Hello and welcome to News Trash here on The Geek Show, the inquisitive otter of video game news programs. I can't think of good intros, so I just think of the first thing that comes to my head. I am Rob, and as ever, I've been joined by producer Rob. Hello there.
Hello, and there is nothing wrong with otters. There is an entire channel dedicated to otters as pets.
Well, there's more than one. There's two. There's Katsumet and Aty Atty.
I have no decision on which one is my favourite because they're both adorable.
I like Katsumet because one of the, I think it's Kataru, is the otter. When he's eating cat food, he'll eat one in his mouth and then he'll dump the next one in water and then eat it out of the water and then he'll eat the next one out straight into his mouth. You know, otters are wonderful creatures.
Yeah, Katara's got weird eating. Seeing him eating salmon is just, like, it's amazing. Just the pauses he strikes.
As bad as video game YouTube is, as bad as movie criticism YouTube is, or influencer YouTuber is, or literally political YouTube, any YouTube you could possibly imagine is poisonous and is noxious and is foul and is aggressive and as horrible and as racist as all of that is, animal YouTube is the most wholesome thing.
Oh, God, yeah.
But seeing as though we're not on wholesome YouTube, we're on awful YouTube, I think we just better crack right on with. Because, you know, let's be fair, it's video games. We're talking about video games. If you're watching this on YouTube or listening on podcast providers, thank you. Support us in whatever way you can. We'll have details that later. But let's be honest, most video game news recently, besides announcements, has been kind of awful.
Yeah. We're going to start off with Sony and their PlayStation Investor Relations document, which it made for interesting reading. Obviously, we know that the PlayStation 5 is the best-selling Sony console so far, you know, from launch. It sold like 7.8 million.
I don't know how it's managed that when other consoles are much more readily available. There's some sort of witchcraft at play here.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
how it can be so hard to get hold of.
Yeah.
But being the best selling at the same time, I don't understand that.
You know, for the financial year ending March 2021, they'd sold 7.8 million units. And according to the relations document, they, you know, it's sold at a loss. Now, we were kind of aware of this already. But in context, the PlayStation 4 sold 7.6 million in the same time frame. PlayStation 3 sold 3.6 million. And the PlayStation 2 sold 1.4 million. And the PlayStation 1, in the same time frame, only sold 700,000 units.
Yeah, just on sort of to saddle on the back of that. Those numbers jump up exponentially generation on generation.
Yeah.
And there's one thing, there's one slide in the presentation that they've, I don't know if they made public or it's been made public by press outlets, but one slide in particular said the share of female gamers The share of female gamers, I think, has gone up to 41% in the last financial year.
Yep.
Which, despite all those people who are territorial gatekeepers about gaming, I think that is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's a broad open church and everybody's welcome. And the fact that sales figures like this back it up, that's just good. That's just good for the industry.
There are some interesting aspects of the document that I do want to touch on. But one thing that I will say with regards to the sales figures of the consoles, just to kind of put this into a greater context, PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2, PlayStation 3, the market for video games year on year and generation on generation was much smaller in the PlayStation 1 era and in the PlayStation 2 era. And it was predominantly male gamers.
Yes.
We know that. That's a historical fact. You know, that's already well documented. We already know this. From the PlayStation 3 onwards, the market starts expanding.
Well, they are the mainstream industry now. They are the most mainstream industry. And anybody who tries to suggest differently doesn't know what they're talking about.
Exactly. So, yes, I think it's only natural that there are more female gamers now. I think that is a healthy reflection of the industry, I would say.
Getting rid of this gamer bro mentality that games are for men and boys, I think can only be a good thing when that's sort of thrown in the history bins.
Yeah.
Good.
Where it falls down a little bit, I feel, is when you look at the retention by age. They're saying that PlayStation 1 gamers have stuck with us in one of their slides, and it shows this massive fall off after you hit kind of late 30s and onwards, with the trend is massively down. And that to me is kind of a reflection of just companies in general, how there seems to be a common thing within companies in general where they would rather have new people in than cater to their existing customers.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be the same with my generation, who are who discovered gaming through the PlayStation 1 effectively. I mean, I played stuff before it, but PlayStation 1 was the generation where I was like, whoa, what's this? This is amazing. Yeah. I'm on this ship. I'm on this boat for good now. But this generation, my generation, I think it won't be the same because it's a much more normalised industry.
Yeah.
Whereas people who are a bit older than me, it isn't.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's interesting aspects of this report. They want 50% of the market share for the console space, which I think is ambitious. The PlayStation 4 had 45, so it's not unreasonable, I think, they could increase it. But that's 45% when the industry was basically made up of Sony, who were on their A game, Nintendo, who were crazy on their A game, and Microsoft, who were drunk at the wheel. Now, Microsoft aren't drunk at the wheel anymore. They've woke up and they've had the DUI and they've gone through the training that they get put on by the AA. And now they're a properly functional member of society and a proper driver on the road, a responsible and safe driver. Well, I don't know where this analogy is going, but I'm going to continue with it.
I have no idea.
But yes, it's a competitive, fully realised market. So I think that 50 is very, very... it's a bit too high in the sky. I can understand how they come to that conclusion, but evidence of what the industry is now, I don't think it'll be able to be backed up, that one. But anyway, I mean, it's an interesting bit of reading for Sony. It's nice that they acknowledge that Returnal has been a successful new IP, which I think is great. It's a great nod for Housemarque. And nobody said this, but I do think that Sony will snap them up and make them an exclusive party, maybe after one or two more games. So...
They might not even wait that long. It might be earlier than that. Some of the other interesting bits from this was the PlayStation Plus, the number of people on PlayStation Plus, 48 million.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah, that's a lot of income just from PlayStation Plus as well. Majority of those people are using PlayStation Plus for multiplayer with the free-to-play game, with the free games as a secondary thing. In terms of their future development plans, Sony have indicated that they do want to start developing in markets that are outside of their usual stomping grounds. So places like South America, Africa, the majority of Asia and Russia. They've put those as future development prospects. The investor document did make clear that they've been thinking, you know, Jim Ryan did say that they've been thinking about how players enjoy their content, and they've had some early success experimenting with mobile games and apps, and it's just one of the avenues that they're exploring to reach millions of gamers beyond their platforms, which is good. You know, it shows that they're aware of changing gamer trends and changing habits, and they're looking to capitalize on them. So that's good. So, yeah, moving on. Yeah, EA.
What are those tykes being up to this time?
EA's released some of their financials, and they make for interesting reading. Apparently, EA made around $1.6 billion, a little bit over $1.6 billion, because of Ultimate Team.
From any game to make that much off one mod, that's kind of ew.
Yeah. Well, let's put it this way. That's from their financial report that they've released, right? That's 29% of all the money that EA brought in 1 year was from Ultimate Team alone.
Refer to previous answer.
Yeah.
Ew.
And a lot of people will rightly focus on the fact that Ultimate Team is bringing in that massive amount of revenue. But one of the bits of the financial report that that stuck out for me personally was that EA, their cumulative pre-tax profits since the fiscal year of 2007 was $6.02 billion. Yeah?
Yeah.
That covers the period of time since Ultimate Team mods were first introduced. During that same period of time, EA's cumulative estimated income tax expense for the same period of time was minus $675 million.
Hang on. So instead of paying tax, somebody's given them $600 million, effectively.
See, yeah, it makes for an effective tax rate of minus 11%. Now, in America, the corporate tax rate was 35%, but it's been dropped down to 21% since 2017. But it does raise a lot of questions that EA are effectively only having a tax rate of 19%, which is below what America expects its corporations to pay as a rule in general.
Here's the thing, right? Governments and big businesses, I don't know if you've heard this, listeners. This might be a revelation to you, or the sarcasm might really be hitting. I don't know. But either way, big businesses, teeny weeny bit corrupt.
Yeah, I mean, at this moment in time, right, and over the past 5 years, there are 8 taxing agencies in 8 different countries that are examining EA's returns. That's the US, Italy, Spain, the UK, Germany, Sweden, India, and France.
Yeah, it's kind of skeevy, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, this is an industry where they've been able to get away with it through all sorts of jiggling IPs and stuff like that. Activision Blizzard managed to, you know, they were hauled over the coals because they basically used international IP juggling to send billions to their subsidiaries in tax havens. Rockstar North went a full decade without paying any corporate tax, even though during that decade they made Grand Theft Auto 5 the biggest selling game of all time.
And I have GTA Online, which is basically like an unending well of cash.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. This is the sort of thing where you think, why am I even bothering with games with these companies? Because they're just genuinely kind of skeevy and evil and trying to do everything they can out of getting to pay their bills. But when it comes to you, they will fleece you clean in a heartbeat. So that's why I never played Red Dead Redemption, because I think that company, I don't care anymore. Honestly.
You want to play this game? Give us your blood, give us your muscles, give us the entirety of your body. Are you using that skeleton? No, we'll take that as well.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time I played an Activision Blizzard game. I can't at all, not in the slightest. Just think EA are heading that way. They're genuinely heading that way too. I just don't want anything to do with these companies. And the more people do that, the better it is for the gaming industry, because that is acting through, well, it's your opinion through your actions. It's not like, I don't like this company, but I'm still going to buy the games.
Yeah.
If you don't like the company, don't support them.
Absolutely. Speaking of big companies with dodgy taxes, Amazon.
Oh, those lovable takes. What are they up to? Did you see how I did the same thing there? Because it's exactly the same story. Well, not the same story.
It's not. Right, you know Amazon have that New World MMO that's supposed to come out in August this year?
Oh, they've actually put a release date to that.
Yeah, it's supposed to come out in August. Supposed to.
Hmm.
So, Amazon were doing some alpha testing or beta testing. I can't remember which one it was. Alpha testing, I think it was. And they basically had an in-game storefront. And the in-game storefront raised a few eyebrows for some of the things that were in the in-game storefront that you had to pay cash for. Like, not in-game cash, but actual hard currency. Things like fast travel.
Yeah, there was a bit of a backlash to this, and they had their usual... The social media reaction. I haven't got it in front of me, but it kind of utterly inept, and they were torn over, dragged over the coals ass first for it.
Yeah.
I think essentially it was, it's to make the game easier for those who don't have the time to dedicate to it. And this Twitter response was, really? In 2021, that's what you're trying to say?
Yeah.
Come on. We know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And then the social media guy kept on digging and digging and digging and digging.
Yep.
It's bad.
Yeah, it was an awful, awful response. But isn't it strange how Amazon got hauled over the coals for having to pay money for fast travel, basically putting fast travel behind a paywall, yet Nintendo kind of got a pass?
Well, that just says a lot about video gaming culture, how Nintendo fans... are very, 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 very defensive of the fact of anything Nintendo do, despite Nintendo acting and having some really, really, really weird corporate strategies.
Yeah. I'm Skyward Sword HD, right? I wasn't a big fan of the original Skyward Sword when it came out. I thought the controls were really, really janky.
Well, you weren't alone. I mean, it's one of the more disliked in Zelda history.
The thing about Skyward Sword, they basically said, okay, you can fast travel in this game as long as you buy the Zelda and Loftwing amiibo, which basically means that, I mean, that's a paywall.
It's not just a paywall. It's a paywall that's going to sell out really, really quickly because those amiibos are like cracked to Nintendo fans. As soon as they hit the star shelves, they're gone.
Yeah, which means... it's a paywall that's only going to increase in the amount you have to pay for it.
Yeah. And Nintendo will be aware of how popular amiibos are, otherwise they still won't be selling them.
Yeah. I don't know whether Amazon's approach to it or Nintendo's approach to it is the more disheartening.
The lesser evil isn't Amazon, but both evil.
We just started off with lots of evil. We started off with some positive Sony news, but then it just descended into a den of evil. So let's go back to some more heartening news.
Evil's a strong word, but it's an accurate word too.
So more hearty news, more news that's good for the soul. Time Splitters, Free Radical the original founders of Free Radical have reformed.
Yeah, I mean, I've got issues with this news story. I mean, on the face of it, I can't be happier that Time Splitters is back.
Yeah.
Because it kind of pre-Fortnited Fortnite. I don't think there'd have been a Fortnite without Time Splitters, because this is a game where you're effectively playing as cartoon characters, people out of time, all sorts of wacky characters in a multiplayer shooter, which...
Time Splitters was kind of the first hero shooter, wasn't it?
In a way, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, before you had stuff like Team Fortress and Fortnite and all sorts of stuff like that, there was Time Splitters.
It was a fantastic game.
Yeah.
Really happy that Free Radical especially are reforming to bring it back, because they were the company which, you know, formed it, and they were the company which got what that was. And I think they were bought by Crysis, and then they just sort of vanished into the ether.
Yeah.
My issue here is they've announced it way too early. I think it would have been an amazing... and here's one more thing for like a press conference where they just say, out of the blue, drop a trailer for Time Splitters. And like people who grew up in sort of playing games in the early noughties will just sort of have a collective pant loosening, much in the same way that, you know, Shenmue 3 did when that was trailed at Sony's E3.
Yeah.
Much in this, Skate have done it the same way as well. They've announced it way too early. It'd be better when this stuff just comes out of the blue and it's like, oh my god, this is so cool.
Yeah.
Second point.
I agree with you on that.
This is going to be a very hard sell because the people, young people don't know what Time Splitters is, and selling it to that audience is going to be an uphill battle.
Yeah. Do you know the weird thing? I think Time Splitters is one of those games where if they bring it back, Don't just bring it back on one platform. Open it up to basically take on the likes of Fortnite.
I don't think they can. It's too much of a titan.
I think I don't think they can. But then again, you know, Call of Duty Warzone managed to take a good portion of the audience, didn't it?
Make it what it was in the time that it was out. In the time it was out, it was an antidote to Call of Duty and brown military shooters and grey military shooters. So what is the antidote to, what is the formula there in the modern shooter that needs an antidote to it, if you get me? There's something which is too much of, so Time Splitters always was better when it was zagging to what, when the industry was zigging.
Yeah, you've got a good point there. I mean, it's difficult now because you've got stuff like Fortnite and Overwatch and all these other hero shooters that are around, so...
Oh, yeah. Like I said, it goes back to the point of, I think they've announced this too soon. I think they just should have announced that they've reformed Free Radical and left it at that, and let people's imagination do that.
I think one of the things that I always loved about Time Splitters was kind of the humour of it.
Yeah.
And I think if they managed to retain that at least, then that's something to build on.
And also, one of the things, I think I mentioned it before on some of our shows, that if it's multiplayer, everybody's banned from using the monkey because he's below everybody else's eye line, so it's an automatic win if you're the monkey.
Yeah. Don't remind me.
The monkey is cheating.
Anyway, moving on to Valve, and they are reportedly making a handheld Steam PC.
Which, I've seen the designs of it, and it kind of looks like a Switch, but a bit bigger, and without the removable bits.
Now, this is according to a news report by Ars Technica, which is...
All right, sorry, all right. I know where you're going. Put your grown-up head on for a minute.
Sorry, I love their name. I know what it means, but I just love the name. Multiple sources familiar with the matter have apparently confirmed speculation that Valve are preparing a Switch-like handheld PC alternately referred to as Neptune or SteamPal. Now, little bit of video games history for people who don't actually know, and most people probably don't. I think calling it SteamPal is fine, but I would hesitate to call it Neptune, because Neptune was one of the code names for an ultimately failed idea from Sega to merge the Sega Genesis with the 32X and produce a new console.
Eventually they
decided to go completely to the left and go with the Sega Saturn, which
wasn't exactly a success either.
Yeah.
I mean, this could be a bit of a game changer for PC gaming, because there's always this stigma with PC gaming that it's effectively an addiction to buying new kit every so often, whereas this kind of circumvents a lot of that, and it's just sort of a one-size-fits-all, but the question has to be asked then, of the really system-intensive games, how will that sort of scale?
Yeah, I mean, there's that, but the fact is that the handheld PC market is already pretty well established. Steam aren't really jumping into a new market. I mean, you have companies like GPD, who have been producing handheld PCs for years now, and you have a new one that's coming out called the Aya Neo, which is, it looks like a Switch. It's, you know, there's design elements that are clearly from the Switch.
Yeah, the living and dying of this idea is the price point.
Yeah, that will be the ultimate thing. But given how much the Steam controller cost...
How much?
It was like 50 quid for the controller, or 60 quid for the controller.
It's quite expensive, yeah.
Yeah, and given how much the Steam controller actually cost, I would say that this probably isn't going to be cheap.
That's where it lives and dies, ultimately, yeah, unfortunately. Yeah. It's a cool idea, and it would actually get me invested in online, well, PC gaming a little bit more.
Yeah.
But,
I mean,
price.
I've tried some of the handheld PCs. I've tried the GPD stuff, and they're impressive machines for what you have. You know, it literally is a gaming PC in the palm of your hand.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's the screen size to take into account and various things like that. The Aya Neo, I haven't actually managed to get my hands on one to try yet, but I've heard very good things about it. Anyway, that's your main news. Now for some quicker stories. Square Enix seem to be making a thing of going down a darker route with their newer games, because Dragon Quest XII apparently is going to be much darker than their previous offerings.
Which isn't saying much, because, you know, Dragon Quest is quite brash and cartoony.
Yeah.
But still, it's a new direction. So it's a new direction. It's how you keep things fresh after that long.
Yeah, it's how you keep things fresh. But, I mean, I'm just thinking about it with... because along with the Dragon Quest XII apparently being darker, there is Team Ninja who are working on a Neo-like Final Fantasy spin-off for the PlayStation 5 and PC.
Souls-like game. This has been leaked, apparently. All of Square's E3 press conference is leaked, and this is one of the big things which has sort of made it through the noise.
Yeah.
I'm interested if they make it like Dark Souls light in the same way that Star Wars Fallen Order was, as in it's not going to be this difficulty curve, which, as much as the Souls like game fans love those games, they're not really broad in their appeal. They've got a specific audience, and that audience laps it up, but it's not broad in that by any way.
Well, I mean,
if it's light, like Fallen Order is, cool, go for it. I'm interested.
I agree with you totally on that, and the main reason for that is because one of the things about the Final Fantasy games is that even though some of them are challenging, you know, their main aim is to tell a story. Mm-hmm. They don't make it so difficult that you can't actually finish the game. What I'm interested in though is if this whole thing signifies Square Enix kind of returning to their roots of telling darker stories, which is how they basically made their name in the first place. And you look at Final Fantasies 4 through to 10, right? All of them are much darker stories than the usual fare that you have in RPGs. It was after 10 that with 10 Part 2 and then Final Fantasy 12, it kind of lost the way a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, the ultimate upshot of this is Square are doing some interesting things. So we're intrigued by this upcoming direction.
Yeah. Final Fantasy 16, the trailer makes it look really dark.
Yeah.
You know, so, we'll be watching this space quite closely. Again, something to do with E3. Microsoft and Bethesda have set a June date for their E3-adjacent Xbox showcase.
You know, the way you worded it there, it sounds like Phil and Todd have set their date for the big day. It's June the 13th. It's going to be a big, lovely ceremony. And everybody's friends are going to be invited. But, you know, it's cool. It's cool.
Are they going to play the wedding march? Da, da,
da, da, da, yeah, da, da. Which kind of is that, isn't it, really?
It is.
But the fact that it's like a 90-minute ceremony.
I can't get that image on my head now.
Yeah. I can't myself. Wish my brain never did that. But the fact that it's kind of sum up like two companies that had a separate press conferences and put that into one 90-minute block.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that's good or bad because, you know, I don't know. I'm still a bit dubious about this relationship between Xbox and Bethesda and whether it's beneficial to both or whether it's just basically an easy way to get a load of games.
Well, it's definitely the latter. It's definitely an easy way to get a load of games.
So, you know, Todd was the stripper and Phil said, will you marry me? I'll get you away from this world. It's horrible world.
Is this the video game equivalent of leaving Las Vegas?
Sure. Yeah, sure. For this metaphor to really come to life, sure, let's do that.
Right, okay.
But anyway, short story, you know, this is the press conference where they kind of have to validate this relationship. They have to start validating it because, you know, that's a lot of money. Yeah. And it's the relationship which is kind of more important than any for Xbox.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, that it's not taking place at E3, but adjacent to E3.
Well, E3's kind of irrelevant now anyway, isn't it? It's like Devolver do it in the car park, so you know.
Well, Devolver do it anywhere. They don't care.
Oh, who are they in this relationship? They're the streetwalker. I think they'd be okay with that analogy. They kind of have that dangerous air about them in Devolver, so they'd be okay with that.
Right, you know how I think it was back at the end of 2020, beginning of 2021, people were talking about how Sony have like 10 different things in the works when it comes to movies and TV shows, and they're all based off video games. So there was The Last of Us stuff and the Uncharted movie and all sorts of things like that.
Because there's a Shame movie as well that they're talking about.
Yeah. Well, kind of, Netflix did kind of experiment a little bit with video games. There was the Stranger Things mobile game, and I suppose if you stretch the metaphor quite a lot, you could say Black Mirror Bandersnatch was a kind of game.
Yeah, kind of.
But Netflix have basically said that they want to do more with interactive entertainment. Now, they haven't actually said whether that is them doing more video game-based stuff or whether that's them doing more kind of choose-your-own-adventure TV-based stuff.
Just for the sake of this being a video game show, I don't know how that's going to work, because as far as pure IP, I don't know whether Netflix have that many to really play with.
Well, the reason, the link here is who Netflix confirmed it to, right? Because it wasn't, well, basically they confirmed it to GameStop.
Yeah, that's implying games then, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's basically where it's got everybody thinking, hang on, Netflix is going to start doing video games?
Yeah, but at the end of the day, they don't have that many IP to work with, and honestly, if they don't work with IP for a company like Netflix to get involved, I don't see where the point is. They're not going to start making indie games that have nothing to do with any of their content. I don't think they're set up as that way for a company.
Yeah, I don't think that they're going to launch into video games in a massive way. Speaking of launching into things in a massive way, Rockstar partnered with promoter Circo Loco, and they are aiming to support and elevate dance music culture by starting their own record label.
I will say one thing, I've always had a great soft spot for Rockstar when it comes to their radio stations. They've always been expertly curated.
Yeah.
I think GTA 5 and I can't remember GTA 4, but let's just say GTA 5 for the sake of this, was excellent, introduced me to a lot of new bands, all across the spectrum.
I have to say, in terms of game franchises, Grand Theft Auto, as a rule, has always had really good radio stations ever since the first Grand Theft Auto games.
Yeah, so the question here, I mean, not question, it's just a little bit disappointing that they're just planting the flag in electronic music exclusively, because they've done so much with so many different types of music.
And if Rockstar started a radio station, I'd be tuning in. Yeah. Rockstar Radio, and just basically open it up so they play like interesting stuff or have interesting people on expressing interesting opinions. I'd tune in. So, I think it's the partnership with Circo Loco that's basically making them focus more on dance music culture, which, yeah.
I'm not making any comments on that because I'll get in trouble.
finally, do you remember J.J. Abrams wanted to make a Portal movie?
Yeah, for some reason.
Yeah. Well, apparently the Portal movie is now finally on the rails, and they have a script that's being written for the Portal movie now at Warner Brothers.
Of all the games to make a movie out of, why Portal?
I have no idea.
It wasn't, like, Portal 2, as beloved as it is, isn't story-driven, it's character-driven.
Yeah.
GLaDOS and whatever the guy that, office guy, I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
Stephen Merchant.
Stephen Merchant plays. They were character-driven moments.
Yeah.
And narrative-driven moments. So if you're going to have... Where they're getting this from, I don't know.
Thing is, if you're going to have those characters in the movie, they have to be voiced by Veronica Taylor and Stephen Merchant.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. They won't, though.
No, probably
maybe
not.
Maybe Stephen Merchant.
Stephen Merchant might get away with it, but Veronica Taylor, probably not.
No.
Because that's a main role.
Yeah, but the question remains is, why? And also, the further question remains, Dan Trachtenberg did a pretty spot-on short film, so if it's not better than that, it's kind of made itself redundant.
I mean, does J.J. Abrams need a reason to do stuff?
No. He just goes and ruins franchises that have been beloved for 40 years. That's his job now. there's Doctor Who, J.J. Do you want to have a crack at that and ruin it for entire generations upon generations of people?
I'm withholding any comment because I know plenty of Whovians and they're already unhappy with the state of Doctor Who as it is right now, and I don't want to get punched.
It could always be worse. It could always be JJ'd.
Is that the verb now?
Yeah, because in Community, if you do something badly, you brither it. So in the movie, you JJ it when you just completely overcook it. So it could always be JJ'd. But anyway, yeah, that's the news stories. Let's do some trailer trash, shall we? Could have went with all sorts of different directions with this. The obvious one would have been Horizon Forbidden West, but it just looks like more of the same. It looks good. It looks beautiful underwater, but I'm kind of underwhelmed, and it doesn't seem the internet is allowing that opinion.
Yeah. I mean, what Rob's referring to is the 14 minutes of apparently gorgeous gameplay on the PlayStation 5.
Gorgeous graphics. Released. Yes.
Yeah. It looks stunning, but I'm looking at it, I'm going, yeah, but, you know, I've done all this already.
Yeah, not having that hook. And I mean, the first one, you learn who you are, and I think that's much more interesting than what they could do in this. And I'm not really told us why we should care, because honestly, with a game that long, it's the story that really keeps you going. So anyway, that's not trailer of the week. That's not trailer trash, is it?
No.
Or is it?
We did want to mention the fact that the trailer is out, and it does. We also want to mention how there are mechanics in the game that, Breath of the Wild has caused a bit of a storm in third-person action adventure games with that parachute thingy. Every single goddamn game is using it now.
Yeah, but instead, Dying Light 2.
Yeah, which looks much more interesting and looks like... Right, I'm not a big fan of first-person games. You know this, right?
Yeah, because you're one of the people who get nauseous because of it.
Yeah, yes.
Motion.
But Dying Light is one of the few games where I can actually sit down and play it. Okay. And I enjoyed the first game. But I felt it was lacking in some areas. But the trailer for Dying Light 2, the gameplay trailer for Dying Light 2, it's much more interesting. It looks like it's going to be much more dynamic in terms of how forces interact with each other.
The one thing which I think is really buried a bit by what you've said there is the fact that this game last year was all signs pointed to Lost in Development Hell, and it just sort of faded away.
Yeah.
And then you get like this, and then a release date, and oh, it's alive. Oh, it's coming out this year. Oh, that's much more interesting than Horizon's gonna Horizon.
Yeah, Horizon on the Horizon.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to this. It looks interesting. It is another zombie game, but I like the fact that they're putting that sort of the world evolves around your choices and how successful you are. And that was the thing which made them like put it on the back burner, because it was a very hard mechanic to really bring to life.
Yeah, it's one of those mechanics that you have to have, to make it work, you have to have quite literally hours and hours and hours and hours and tens of thousands of lines of redundant dialogue, hours and hours and hours of redundant animation just to make that work.
Yeah, and doing that within a pandemic as well doesn't make it the easiest of tasks.
Yeah. When I say redundant, I don't mean useless.
I mean, you have one playthrough, and then the other playthrough might be completely different, so you never experience some things. And then the second playthrough, you might have a completely different playthrough and experiencing completely different things. And then the third playthrough, so on and so on and so on and so on.
Yeah, exactly. So every playthrough can potentially be, vastly different to the one before. And that, to me, it makes it such an interesting game to play. I love games like that, where no matter, every single time you play it, it's always different.
Well, as long as you try to do different things, yeah.
As long as you try and do different things. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I hated the moral choice system, the black and white morality system that games used to use.
You mean Infamous is Infamous? Black. Yeah, that's a kind of a funny word for this franchise, isn't it? It was an Infamous morality system where, are you a good guy or are you a bad guy? Choose! And it was the same with Mass Effect.
Yeah, and me, I'm an I-don't-care guy. I just want to be over here doing my own thing.
A sliding scale of grey. But
why are you pestering me with your problems?
Yeah. So that's it for this week's news trash. We'll be back next week, trashing more news. Until next time, if you liked what we did, you liked the cut of our jib, there's ways you can support us. The social media links that have been on the page all the way through this. As well as a Patreon in the description, and get involved with some exclusive content over there.
But yeah, thank you for listening all the way to the end. We appreciate each and every one of you beautiful misfits. And we'll see you next week.
Bye!